First of all, thank you for inviting me along to speak this evening. The Foundation for Science and Technology is well revered, and I can see why. Not just from the wonderful building and the resources, but the people who have been tied in with this institution for quite some time. The future of energy, the sector in Scotland. I would first like to thank the Foundation for Science and Technology for giving me the opportunity to speak in this debate. Energy is both a critical component of the Scottish economy and a crucial aspect of our future as a country. Having previously spent many years working in the oil and gas industry, both in Aberdeen and abroad, as a contracts manager for companies such as Shell, BP and the like, I have both seen firsthand and contributed to the changes that have taken place in the Scottish energy sector over the past few decades. Based on my knowledge and expertise in the oil and gas industry, both in Scotland and worldwide, I can confidently say that the future of the energy sector in Scotland lies in increasing energy efficiency in regards to the use of fossil fuels and ultimately in the use of renewable resources of energy. Earlier this year, the Chancellor of the Exchequer, George Osborne, cut the budget for Department of Energy Climate Change by £70 million, £40 million of which will be cut from the budget for energy efficient subsidies. The programmes which will be cut include the Green Deal and the Green Deal Home Improvement Fund, as well as solar power subsidies and feed-in tariffs. These programmes were designed to provide financial assistance to individuals and families alike looking to make their homes more energy efficient, not to mention the opportunities it presents to businesses, both SMEs and corporations alike. Amber Rudd, the Secretary of State for Energy and Climate Change, stated regarding the cuts that they, the Conservatives, are on the side of hard-working families and businesses, which is why we cannot continue to fund the Green Deal. However, I fail to see how cutting the Green Deal and other energy efficient and renewable energy subsidies helps either hard-working families or businesses. Cuts to these subsidies have harmed local and national businesses and have resulted in job losses in the energy sector around the country at the local level. The Mark Group, a national installer of installation and solar panels, announced on the 7th of October 2015 that it would be entering administration, in part a result of cuts to energy efficient subsidies. It is worth noting, for me in particular, that 37 of my constituents in the Coatbridge, Cryston, Belsill area will be made redundant during this closure in the Ruddingston branch, as well as many, many more around the country. Throughout the UK, more than 900 hard-working individuals will be made redundant as the Mark Group goes into administration due to energy-efficient subsidy cuts. No doubt there will be more to come based on current trends, and that's just one example of one company affected by these cuts. Not only have these cuts resulted in the closure of businesses operating throughout the UK, they have also resulted in the closure of small local businesses, the supply chain that supports, the critical supply chain that supports the industries that we work in today and have spent so long in building, particularly in the renewable sector. I fail to see again how these business closures and job losses are a direct result of cuts to the Green Deal and other energy efficiency subsidies are beneficial to both hard-working families and businesses. Private investment is critical to the future of the energy efficient and renewable sector. Cuts to these subsidies are removing incentives for businesses to enter the sector as they create barriers to entry, particularly for small startup companies. A huge opportunity has been missed to both encourage the establishment of new businesses in this ever-important sector, to create new jobs, and even to continue with the existing schemes as funding now becomes less certain, particularly for the particular strong example being with onshore wind. As highlighted previously, the new feed-in tariffs cuts to solar energy discourages renewable energy, which some in my constituents regard as a very, very much a fledgling industry. The proposed cuts are predicted to result in 20,000 job losses and result in 1 million fewer solar panels being installed in the next 5 years than if the feed-in tariff were maintained. Industry experts have predicted that the UK solar industry would be strong enough to go subsidy-free by 2020, only 5 years away, if the feed-in tariff is maintained. I struggle to understand the logic behind decimating a growing industry for the sake of short-term savings by this austerity-obsessed UK government. You cannot simply establish or re-establish a supply chain from thin air for a specialised industry. It is quite clear to me that the future in terms of what we are here to discuss in the wider energy debate centres around renewable energy. Renewable energy, not only in a small scale, but also within the bigger picture. One of the first acts of the new UK Conservative administration in Westminster was to privatise the Green Investment Bank. Not only has the Green Investment Bank been marginalised, the privatisation of it has gone back on one of the key platforms of Vince Cable's tenure in the Department of Energy for Business and Innovation. It is important not to view the Green Investment Bank in the abstract, because this fine capital city of Edinburgh, it actually employs people here. In terms of future green energy investment, the privatisation, as currently proposed, is a retrograde step, and it fails to live up to the key reason why such an investment bank was created in the first place. We remember, to accelerate the UK's transition to a greener, stronger economy. In terms of the Green Investment Bank, I've received a ministerial response from my written question I submitted in July regarding the bank's involved in the proposed privatisation. While the Minister for Business, Innovation and Skills prefaced the response by describing the discussions with potential investors as commercially competent, it's confirmed to me that UBS has been advising the Green Investment Bank regarding privatisation. It should be noted that the Union Bank Switzerland, although a highly regarded investment bank, has a particular problem with failing to comply with business regulations. Just this week, it was fined a total of $17.5 million for failing to comply with SEC regulations. It is important to recognise that the excellent campaign run by the Edinburgh Chamber of Commerce to establish the Green Investment Bank was not just about green energy as such, although that's important. It was also about harnessing the economic benefit for Scotland, and also to build on the good work Edinburgh, as one of the prime financial capitals of Europe, Edinburgh was in particular chosen for its known expertise in asset management and for its ranking as the second largest financial sector in UK. A vote of confidence in Scotland and a message to enhance renewable energy has been somewhat missed, because once again we find our sights looking south to London. These cuts to energy efficiency and renewable subsidies have not just impacted businesses. Unfortunately, their effect stretches much further than the closure of businesses and losses of jobs. The most recent stats show that 40% of households in Scotland are considered to be living in fuel poverty. That statistic, to me, is completely unacceptable. Fuel poverty has more far-reaching effects than simply not being able to keep the heating on. According to Friends of the Earth, children living in cold homes are more than twice as likely to have respiratory problems as those living in warm homes. The same report found that adolescents living in cold homes are five times more likely to have multiple mental health problems than adolescents living in warm homes. Fuel poverty means that household income, which would otherwise be used to purchase healthy, nutritious food, you would hope, instead goes to pay for energy bills. It negatively impacts upon the emotional well-being and educational attainment for children. This combination of mental, physical health problems, poor diet, emotional turmoil, and diminished educational attainment, caused in part by fuel poverty, is a recipe for condemning people to the cycle of poverty, in essence, poor and paying for it. And 40% of households in Scotland face these consequences of fuel poverty every winter. At the same time, as so many households are struggling to keep the heat on, the big six energy companies are making massive profits. Scottish Power quadrupled its profit last year from £27 million to £114 million. British Gas's profits rose 99% from 2014 to 2015, notably at the same time as its parent company, Centrica, planned to cut 4,000 jobs. Not only have the big six been making massive profits, the CMA has recently found that energy customers were being paid collectively overcharged by £1.2 billion per year. Following this finding, I asked the Secretary of State for Energy and Climate Change what steps would be taken to amend policy in response to overpayment. The UK government response was that while no action would be taken in response to the findings until December 2015, The lack of this of action in this finding from either the UK government or the energy companies involved until long after winter has begun, while so many are struggling to pay bills, is questionable to say the least. It is clearly time for a change from the oligarchy and market dominance from the Big Six. The dominance up to this point could be considered by some as a clear case of market failure. The emergence of the renewable sector is a critical opportunity to create a competitive, functioning market which works for consumers and not for monopolistic corporations. The primary factors contributing to fuel poverty are household income, fuel costs and the energy efficiency of homes. The cutting of these subsidies, which have been allowed many to make their homes more energy efficient through better insulation, the installation of more efficient boilers, or reducing their dependence on fossil fuels by generating their own solar energy, is a step back in tackling fuel poverty, as it reduces the capacity to make homes more energy efficient and improving thereby the lives of the people therein. In addition, as a constituency MP, I'm very much aware that one of the contributing factors to energy efficient homes or inefficient homes is poor quality housing. Due to the condensation and damp, many are forced to open windows during winter while the heat is on. Fuel poverty is therefore not a standalone issue, but also tied in with other issues such as the current housing crisis. Tackling fuel poverty must be a key factor when considering future growth potential in the Scottish energy industry. And it's my belief that ending fuel poverty goes hand in hand with using or utilising fossil fuels more efficiently and moving towards the exclusive use of renewable energy. I know here that many here believe that the future of Scotland's immediate industry lies, an energy industry lies in unconventional oil and gas exploration or fracking. I've been a strong supporter of the Scottish Government's moratorium on onshore unconventional oil and gas extraction, introduced at the beginning of this year. And I commend the Scottish Government for recently expanding this moratorium to include underground coal gasification. Energy companies involved in unconventional gas extraction have continued to pursue plans to expand their operations despite this moratorium. This is happening all across the Central Belt. We must remember that clean water is one of Scotland's most plentiful and precious resources, one that continues to become scarcer worldwide and one which has the potential to grow substantially as an export industry, hence why it's referred to as blue gold. A lack of clean water can substantially hamper growth potential, which has occurred in recent times, in particular in the states of Nevada and Arizona, where I used to live, leading to a wider discussion that the next potential global flare-up could revolve around water wars. It is essential that we ensure that this invaluable resource is protected, and unconventional oil and gas extraction has been known to completely compromise huge sources of clean water. We must be careful. Based on my experience in oil and gas, I'm minded to reject unconventional oil and gas extraction, though I am open-minded enough to be able to consider both sides of the argument before coming to a decision. But let's be clear, it sits very much within the companies to prove to us that it is safe, that it will be policed, and that it will be enforced, any regulation. However, like any other fossil fuel, the oil and gas would be extracted through fracking is finite. Ultimately, the future of any Scottish industry lies in renewable energy. Scotland has a huge capacity for growth in the renewable industry. We in Scotland have a tenth of Europe's wave potential, a quarter of offshore wind and tidal potential in Europe. For such a small nation, these statistics to me are staggering. Not only does Scotland have the potential to power itself entirely from renewable energy, we also have the opportunity to develop an export market for this high demand resource. This means that despite the global economy becoming increasingly less dependent on oil, as many countries are aiming to reduce their carbon footprint and diversify the type of energy they depend on, Scotland can remain a dominant player in the global energy industry. The SNP, in terms of its administration of the Scottish Government level, has set up an ambitious goal of making Scotland the powerhouse for Europe's renewable energy revolution. I won't be able to finish the rest of it, but on a few issues I'll be quite happy to discuss later. I was Shell's contract lead for the carbon capture project at Llangannet and transferring it from Llangannet to Peterhead, where we worked the project, and it now sits obviously ready to go. Very keen to discuss this and any other subject at a later date. Thank you very much.
Thank you.